Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Farm methods in South Dakota may have been different in the 1800s than they are now, or were they? Brian Stambaugh grew up on a dairy farm near Nisland, South Dakota. He owns Bell Valley Ancient Grains. Stambaugh is giving a presentation on older farming methods and ancient grains, and it's Thursday at noon at the Homestead Adams Research and Cultural Center in Deadwood. He's joining us today from the Sue W. White Studio on the campus of Black Hills State University in Spearfish. Brian, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Laurie, thanks for having me on.
Such a fascinating story, and something that people are really keying into as they try to figure out, you know, where their food actually comes from in this day and age. Tell me a little bit about the, you know, let's give an overview of the presentation first.
Right. Well, we're going to cover the history of farming basically from the 1800s on in South Dakota and how it's grown, how much things have changed, and then talk about why I've went into the ancient grains and using some of the older methods.
And a lot of people come to this conversation that I've heard of based on, you know, gluten intolerance and sort of searching for, you know, why is this happening now? How did you come to be interested in ancient grains and milling practices?
In 2015, well, we've got kind of a smaller farm and maybe relative to some of the huge farms in South Dakota. We've got a couple hundred acres. So 2015, we're trying to figure out some kind of a value-added crop, and commodity prices were low, and they're even lower West River because of the added transportation cost. So that's kind of what led us into looking for some alternative, and looked into ancient grains, and there's some different entities around the country that were marketing these kind of in small packages, and looked like a good way to go. So it was kind of a shift from, you know, kind of marketing semi loads of grain to marketing two or three pound bags.
Yeah. Was there an apprehension in, is this going to pay off? Is it going to be worth the time that we're going to put into it? How did you, you know, get beyond the curiosity toward, you know, a marketing plan that seemed effective?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. it was what do I grow? And then finding the seed of some of the older wheat varieties, just couldn't find it. I eventually ended up just buying bags of food wheat and growing that. So that was the first thing, finding the seed. The next thing was, would it grow? And I remember the first summer, watching my neighbors going up and down the road with fertilizer, and it would hail, or they'd put a fungicide on. And I'm just sitting in my easy chair and thinking, I hope this works. And it grew quite well. Some of the better wheat crops in the area are 80, 90 bushels per acre. So I was not doing any fertilizer sprays or anything, you know, trying to go the chemical-free organic route. And I do about 50. So I don't have the same yield as if you do in all the inputs, but I don't have the input costs either. I've got my own seed now. I'm not fertilizing, spraying, or anything. So then, it grew. The third thing was getting it kind of prepared for retail and getting a cleaning machine and all that. So I went to Idaho, got a 70-year-old grain cleaner, and went through all that learning curve. So was able to get it through that. And then the fourth thing was marketing, and after a couple of years, it's getting there. So there were a lot of
I love everything about this story, especially the moment where you're like, well, this better work. I'm about to really, you know, this is going to pay off, or it's just going to be a chalk up in the learning experience. That's farming in general, right? In
a lot of ways.
So tell me, you know, what kind of seed are you looking for? Why is it so hard to find Why were there so many challenges there?
Well, one of the oldest wheat, the original wheat is called einkorn, E-I-N-K-O-R-N. So that's grew wild. People gathered it 20,000 years ago. And basically, those old wheats are not grown a lot. And then there's ammer and spelt that are also old varieties. And the reason, one of the reasons they don't grow those much and you can't find seed is the combine does not take the hull off. So you have a truckload of wheat, it's half hulls. And not only that, you have to get a de-hulling machine, de-hull it, so people just don't fool with it anymore. And then secondly, a lot of the old wheat varieties grow tall, 4 or 5 feet tall,
right?
And they get knocked down in the wind. And you go on our website, you can see the einkorn crop was about 4 feet high. We had 100-mile-an-hour wind, flattened it into a mat 8 inches high. And most farmers would just call the insurance company at that point and give up. Of course, it's this old stuff you can't really insure. So I was able to actually pick it up with a swather and get about 90% of it. So,
wow. All right. So who is the consumer? Who is the person who is seeking this out and wanting it?
Well, like you said, there's people are more concerned about where their food comes from, just kind of wanting to know where it comes from. And I realized once I started growing it, I thought, well, I should see what it tastes like. So I got a little home mill and milled it up, and I'm not much of a baker, but made some bread and it's like, wow, this stuff is really good. And the family was impressed with the flavor, and we realized this doesn't taste like the stuff you get in the store at all.
Yeah.
So the gluten, you mentioned gluten. All these old wheats have gluten, but the gluten is weaker. So some people with gluten intolerance can tolerate bread made with old varieties of wheat. Not everybody, but that's another interest in that.
Yeah, I've actually read some about that. And again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not giving advice or anything. But the person who had written this article was one of those people who was able to seek out, I think it was the einkorn, and like wept when they got to eat bread.
Yeah.
And said it was a completely different experience for them. Again, there's a lot more that goes into that conversation than just this. But it brings up a question for me about that, which is for somebody who's, say, living in a city somewhere and not putting a lot of thought on where their bread comes from and start seeking something out, it's also a way to connect people with agriculture in general and sort of some of the bigger concepts of who farmers are. Do you find that that the people who are looking for, ancient grains and, locally milled grains, are those kind of people who are getting a deeper relationship with who is making and growing the food?
They are. Yeah, they're interested in, sometimes coming out and seeing it, and they're just interested in learning all they can about whatever product it is they're eating. So they're quite interested.
What's the South Dakota history here as far as, you've done research into, what flour mills were looking like in South Dakota over the years? Give us an overview of that, if you would, please.
Right. My family history goes back 5 generations. They originally, the Kornbergs, Q-U-A-R-N-B-E-R-G, were from Sweden. And actually, the name Kornberg translates into millers on the hill. So they were millers in Sweden. They came over, settled near north of Vermilion and near the town of Riverside, had a mill there. And the families on down the line had the great grandfather started Tri-State Milling, and they grew into 16 mills in western South Dakota. That's now Dakota Mill and Grain. But originally in the 1800s, there was you'd take the wheat to town and mill it. There were 300 flour mills in the state at the turn of the century, and And by 1959, I think there was one, which I think was tri-state, and now there's none. So all the wheat is sent away and comes back as refined flour. So it's been a big change. And, you know, we definitely don't eat like our great-grandparents did.
Right. Are you finding that, you know, what are the conversations with your neighbors and, you know, family members, people that you know, as you've gone on this journey with Bell Valley Ancient Grains, what have some of those conversations been like?
Well, they're really, really interested in it, and I have to appreciate my conversations with my wife, especially for appreciating negative cash flow and tolerating that for a few years, but we, you know, kind of making that turn in that corner. But no, the lot of there's some of the farmers are interested, and eventually, if we can get to a point where we can grow it, and try to get more farmers involved with it, and. Yeah. That try to get other, kind of grow it out that way.
Sold in South Dakota stores? You're having a good luck placing it locally?
Yeah,
from
some.
From a retail standpoint?
Rapid
yeah.
City and Spearfish and a few restaurants. And got a couple bakeries in Colorado getting pallet loads, and they just mail it. They have a mail in the bakery, yeah. Hmm. So we're trying to find some other bakers and, you know, kind of South Dakota and try to work that.
Brian Stambaugh is owner of Bell Valley Ancient Grains, and you can hear him talk on Thursday, April 11th. That's at noon local time at the Homestake Adams Research and Cultural Center. The Preservation Thursday event is called A Brief History and Resurrection of Older Farming Methods and Ancient Grains, A Path Forward to Local Milling of Local Grains. Hey, Brian, thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate your time.
We'll say weather permitting. We'll say
weather permitting, always.
Thank you for having me on.